You have this. I mean, don't throw them out. You can. We're going to be able to reference them from this flowchart. At least this flowchart is really for the first few, classes that we had. And the point in doing this is to really hone in on some of the ideas that we said, to review what we've sort of studied already, and then hopefully once we have a better feel for all the concepts, especially the ones that are after tonight's review, next week's review, so then we'll get a better grip on some of the application from the Poskim that we've talked about last couple times, which was however many weeks ago. But again, always good to review regardless. And I think when you put it into a visual like this, it might help people really get a feel for the different concepts and how to differentiate the different ideas and what the questions were that we asked to get to those ideas. But either way, let's jump into it. So you'll see that the flowchart starts with shir number two. That's because shir number one was just us looking at the pasuk and trying to think of the pasuk and thinking about, you know, different ways that it could be understood before we looked at other people's ways of understanding them. So then we should look at how we think of it. So, and as we saw through the different classes, we actually had many ideas that many of the Mefarshim, many of the commentaries, many of the lines in the Gemara had, like, thought of similar ideas. The first question that we asked ourselves was, when it comes to the, and this also sort of came full circle too, the first question we asked ourselves is, to whom does the mitzvah apply? Right? Let's define some of the words in the pasuk. Hochiach tochiach means you shall surely rebuke et amitacha. That's really the entirety of the actual obligation. You shall surely rebuke your fellow. Let's call him a fellow. So what does it mean? You shall surely rebuke amitacha. So we in the ensuing classes, we talked about, you know, the context of the pasuk, the concept of the Gemara in the pasuk, but let's talk about just the word amitacha. Who is it relevant for? And this is something we, if you remember, we talked about in Rav Moshe's tshuva about the non-religious partner in business. So we talked about a lot of things, but in the first class, we came to the end of the class, we came to the conclusion of two possibilities. And there's definitely overlap between the possibilities. The Kli Yakar says, your kinsmen in mitzvos, which is coming to the exclusion of three different types of people. One person who would not be within the realm of rebuke is the evildoer, someone who's a Rasha. And number one is the Leitz, the scoffer, the mocker. Or number three is the fool. Not really sure, I don't remember the exact word that he used for fool. But those people are not within Amitacha. Now, numbers one and two, for those of you who were at my Monday night class, so that you understand where one and two come from, right? The Pasuk in Mishlei says that you shouldn't rebuke the Rasha or the fool, because they're going to cause you more problems than you're going to gain, right? They're going to reprimand you. We saw that in the Gemara, not that class, but we saw it later in the Gemara. We saw that they could turn it around, and it could be it could outdo whatever good you were trying to do. They're going to start to rebel and to not only reject what you're saying, but also to lead other people astray. And then the fool is an interesting one from the Kli Yakar. The fool is someone who doesn't necessarily have, you know, ill intentions. He doesn't have the plan of uprooting anything you're going to say. It's worthless to talk to them, right? So these are people, individuals who have specific character traits, specific personalities that have negative repercussions, if you will. The Kli Yakar says Amitacha are those people who are not going to cause any negative repercussions. Now, as we mentioned already in that class and in ensuing classes, the Kli Yakar is a commentary on the Torah. And the commentaries on the Torah aren't necessarily giving us the psak. They're not necessarily telling us how to understand the Gemara. They're not trying to tell us the development of the halacha. They're trying to give us a context and a general feel for what the pasuk means. So when the Kleoker says it's coming to the exclusion of these three categories, it's not necessarily the case that he believes in a very strict halachic sense that these are the only three exclusive categories that are outside of the realm of rebuke. It could be that he holds that there are more, and he's just trying to teach us what the meaning of the pasuk. But when we as a group looked into the meaning of Amitecha, so we saw a lot more of a range in terms of the definition. We don't have it here because we didn't go through it in that first class. But Rav Moshe Paskin seemed to have Paskin similar to the Minchas Chinuch that Amitecha is anyone who keeps the mitzvos or is trying to keep the mitzvos, even one you suspect might follow the mitzvos. We saw this in the Mishnah Berurah, I believe, or the Bi'ur Halacha, that Amitecha doesn't simply mean someone who's completely Shomer Shabbos. Amitecha could mean anyone who might be interested in being Shomer Shabbos, right? That they have some kind of inkling towards being an upstanding Jew. Does that mean that they're wearing tefillin every day? Not necessarily. Does that mean that they're always going to light their Shabbos candles every Friday afternoon? Not necessarily. What it does mean, however, is that there's potential. There's potential for them to come back into the fold. There's potential that you have some kind of notion, you have some kind of feeling that maybe they'd be interested in Judaism. That's the type of person, because maybe they asked you a question one time, or because maybe they went to an NTSY Shabbaton one time, whatever it is, if that person has shown any potential for following Judaism, so that's the type of person that would be Amitecha, which is a much more flexible definition than someone who just keeps the mitzvos, which is how we originally understood the Kliyakar to mean, someone who wants to do the mitzvos. You could be a fool and still be within the definition of the Minchas Chinuch. You could be a fool and still want to have somewhat of a connection to Judaism, right? There are many fools like that. Many fools that are willing to be convinced otherwise. So, presumably these are two different opinions. And we had seen, as we said before, different ways that had come to fruition through the different poskim. Any questions on that topic in terms of what Amitecha means?
So with the Kliyakar, you have to know that these people are one of those three. You have to know ahead of time that these people are one of three, and then.
Right. So that's the interesting question we dealt with when it came to I forgot who it was. I think it was Rav Moshe. I keep saying Rav Moshe, but I feel like it was the other one. The Kenyan Torah, who talked about a little bit more the more strict definition of what it means to know that they aren't, or to know that they are Shomer Torah Mitzvos. The Titz Eliezer also we talked about. He had said, Yachol lahatzel min havera dehu avedas nafsho v'gufo rachmano litzlan. If you know that you're able to save him somehow, so that would be one way of saying it. But if someone's mechal Shabbos befarhesya, meaning they're sort of shameless in their violations, so that would be someone who is you're not obligated to. But it's a good question, meaning how do we know one way or the other? And someone asked this on Monday night, I think. I think one of the Kowalskis asked this. How do you know who's who? And we talked about this, and Mr. Brewer said that if you see somebody who's clearly, obviously not going to listen based on his behavior, not based on your hunch, not based on the clothes that he's wearing, but based on the fact that you see, and as the Titz Eliezer says here, you see that he's actively rebelling or not shameful at all when he comes to violating Shabbos. So you look at their behavior. If you don't know any better, so then we come back to the Rav Moshe to say, if he's a secular Jew, so you err on the side of caution and you don't have to rebuke them. But if they're a person who typically is within at least the potential of mitzvos, so then you would have, obviously you have to know a little bit about them to know that they're a little interested. If I remember correctly, the Mishnah Berurah says maybe they've asked you a question once about Judaism. Was his one of his indications. This is not one of those things where I can give you a strict, and any of the posts can give you a strict, tangible answer. Did they do X, Y, or Z? You really have to get a feel for the person. You have to know them a little bit. You also have to know yourself whether or not you'd be able, as we said in the future shiurim, whether you'd be able to give it over in a way that would be acceptable and not counteractive to the purpose of rebuke. So that is the different definitions or the different the category of amitacha, who is considered to be within this pasuk. And then in the third shir, we finally opened up the Gemara that's going to basically dictate many of the halachos of rebuke of Tochacha, because that Gemara is explicitly asking the question, what did the words in the pasuk mean? But interestingly enough, it doesn't start with Hocheach Tochiach. It starts with the beginning of the pasuk. If you remember, the Gemara said, and I have it here in the source sheet, do not hate your brother in your heart. Right? Lo sisna asachicha bilvavecha. You shouldn't hate your brother in your heart. What does that mean, that you hate your brother in your heart? So the Gemara says the following words, and this is as strict of a translation as I could get. One might have thought that the verse means do not hit him, do not slap him, and do not ruin him due to hatred. Therefore, the verse states, in your heart, bilvavecha. This teaches that the verse speaks of hatred in the heart. Meaning, you're allowed to hit him, you're allowed to slap him, and you're allowed to ruin him. The only time you're not allowed to hate somebody is when the hatred's strictly in one heart, in one's heart. If the hatred is in the in a physical form, in some kind of outward expression, so then it's not usur. But we had a general question about how to understand this Gemara. On the one hand, the Gemara sounds like you should never hit somebody, and that would be a very nice conclusion that we would probably all appreciate. But on the other hand, it's saying you're allowed to. So which one is it? Are you allowed to hate or you're not allowed to hate? Don't hate your brother in your heart. So we actually had two different sort of divergent paths when it came to understanding the context of this Gemara. And it basically came down to whether or not we're already talking about rebuke. Meaning, the continuation of the Gemara talks about rebuke. But the question is, does the beginning of the Gemara already talk about rebuke? Rashi said, yeah. Rashi said, this is already talking about a context of rebuke. The Rambam, on the other hand, and the She'iltos thought that this is not talking about rebuke yet. It's just going through the pasuk. The beginning of the pasuk is talking about one halacha, and then the next part of the pasuk is talking about another halacha, and then the end of the pasuk, Lo tisa alav chet, is talking about another halacha. But the Rambam says, or the Rambam seems to say, that the Gemara doesn't mean that this is already within the realm of rebuke. The second part of the pasuk is about rebuke. The first part of the pasuk is a different halacha completely. And therefore, when the Gemara says these words, it's only talking about the strict definition of hatred. The strict definition of hatred is if you hate someone in your heart, and only in your heart. If it's a tangible expression outwardly, so that's not a violation of the prohibition to hate. Rashi, on the other hand, said that the discussion is only in the context of rebuke. That a person can't hate someone in their heart, meaning they have to say something. They have to rebuke the person. Whether that means hitting them also, that's part of the rebuke. So these were two divergent ways to understand the Gemara. The Gemara asks, what does hatred mean? And according to the Rambam, it's talking in general. And according to the Rashi, it's talking about specifically in the context of rebuke. So we had asked the question in that class. We had asked that question, which is, how do we understand the prohibition generally according to Rashi? And if I were to ask you, let me just ask you now. According to Rashi, are you allowed to hit somebody out of hatred? What would you say? What would you say? Are you allowed to hit somebody out of sheer hatred? We don't know. The Rambam thinks that this is explicit, right? The Rambam thinks this is talking about a general prohibition of hatred. Esther's saying, no, you can't hit someone. You cannot hit someone. The Rambam seems to say that you're allowed to in general. So maybe we would think that because Rashi's disagreeing, Rashi would think that this is not talking about generally the allowance to hit, but rather what it's talking about is the allowance to hit within rebuke. But if it's outside of the context of rebuke, so then you would not be allowed to hit. And that's what you have here on the sheet. So you see Rashi says, under the Rashi heading in the shir number 3, this discussion is only in the context of rebuke. One is allowed to hit to rebuke, can't see and stay quiet, meaning You're not allowed to see what a person says and then keep it inside, right? You can't harbor that hatred, harbor that animosity or that criticism on the inside. You have to make an outward expression of it when it comes to seeing someone doing something wrong. However, according to Rashi in general, when it's outside of the context of rebuke, so you can hate somebody willy-nilly. You're not allowed to hate someone with any allowance to slap them or to hit them or to ruin them. That's only allowed by rebuke. That's the point of the Gemara, or that's what we interpreted to be the point of the Gemara, which is a very big difference, right? Rashi thinks that you're not allowed to slap anyone unless it has a benefit to it, right? There's something beneficial to the hitting. The rebuke is something that you can have, which is in the context, which is done through hitting. But otherwise, you're never allowed to hit somebody. The Rambam, on the other hand, said that this Gemara is talking in general, you know, independent of the mitzvah of rebuke. And that's what you have here, a general prohibition independent of rebuke. According to the Rambam, right, there are two ways to understand this. The first, let's do the Rambam. The Rambam said the only prohibited hatred in general is when it's exclusively in the heart. But hitting is not prohibited based on this pasuk. This pasuk, the only time it's a problem to hate is when it's in your heart. If, however, you would do something outwardly, an external expression of that hatred, like a hit or a slap or a curse, so that would not be within this prohibition, because you're making it clear that you're not two-faced, right? For the Rambam, the isser of hatred is a two-faced isser. Okay, everyone good so far? You remember these? Remember these ideas?
Isn't hatred in your heart an outwardly sort of an expression of the same thing?
Well, it depends on how you define hatred in the heart, right? The way the Rambam is defining it is something that you literally just let fester in your heart. That's a problem. Meaning, you're saying it like, if you really have it in your heart, you're going to talk about the person badly, you're going to do other things badly towards them.
No, but you know, if you get to the point where you're hitting someone, then you're feeling it already too in your...
Oh, okay, good. So that's how the Shelto says it. Right, that's how the Shilto says it. So the Shilto says, similar to the Rambam in the sense that he says it's talking about a general prohibition as opposed to a prohibition specifically by rebuke. But the Shilto says, even hatred, which is exclusively in the heart, is prohibited. Meaning, and this is such a beautiful, you know, I enjoy this in terms of the intellectual gymnastics that are involved. When the Pasuk says, do not hate your brother in your heart. There are two ways to understand that, right? We talked about this before. We talk about this a lot. What's the novelty in that statement, right? What is the thing that I would not have known without that pasuk? According to the Rambam, what I wouldn't have known is that hatred is only punishable when it's in your heart. If it's outwardly, if it's on the outside, meaning you hit them, you slap them, you curse them, you said something to them, if it's on the outside, it's not usser. Meaning, if I didn't know the pasuk, if I didn't have the pasuk, if the pasuk never said it's only a problem in your heart, I would think it's a problem to hit somebody. It's a problem to slap somebody. It's a problem to curse somebody. Says the Rambam, that might be a problem. And as Mincy said, I think back in that class when I was reviewing the class, it's a problem possibly for a different reason. For causing bruises, for hurting somebody, for causing someone to bleed. But it's not a problem of hatred, right? It's not a problem because of this pasuk. This pasuk is an added isser. It's an added prohibition independent of those problems. It's an added prohibition to say you're not allowed to harbor hatred internally. That's how the Rambam understands the pasuk. The She'iltos comes along and says that no, maybe one would think that the only time it's a problem to hate is when you hit, slap, or curse somebody. But I could just keep it inside. Maybe if I don't say it outwardly, it's not a problem. So this is very interesting, first of all, because who's going to really be the judge of that, right? Who's going to say, I know what you're thinking in your heart. You never said so. You never hit anyone. You never cursed anyone. But I know what's in your heart. So it's very obviously very difficult to say such a thing. And that's why these psukim and kedoshim all talk about Ani Hashem Elokeichem. Right at the end of the pasuk said, Ani Hashem Elokeichem. I am Hashem, your God. Because the only one that really knows is God. He knows what's in your heart. So says the She'iltos, the chiddush, the novelty of the pasuk is not to say, is not to restrict the prohibition, is not to restrict it to say that it only applies when you have it in your heart. But says the She'iltos, it means to say it even applies when it's in your heart. Even when you only have it in your heart, even when you're not acting on it, even when you've never cursed somebody, even when you've never hit somebody, it's still prohibited to hate someone in your heart. This still, according to the She'iltos, is outside of the context of rebuke. But what's interesting about that is, how do we apply the opinions of the Rambam and the She'iltos to the realm of rebuke? According to them, there's a general prohibition already on the books. And that prohibition is called hatred. You're not allowed to hate. But how are you not allowed to hate? According to the Rambam, you're not allowed to hate exclusively in your heart. According to She'iltos, you're not allowed to hate in your heart or out of your heart. You can never hate. She'iltos actually reminds me of a documentary I once watched. It's really, I don't know why I watched it. It was a very troubling documentary. It was about this, I think it was a New York City cop. I think it was a cop. Just happened to be a cop. It wasn't about anything he did on duty. But he was part of these very strange online chat rooms where he would talk about doing terrible things to people. He never did them. But he would talk about doing terrible things to people. And then he was actually tried for the case because he was with these people that he would talk about on this chat room. And he never did anything to them, but he had planned all these crazy fantasies about doing terrible things to them. And the question was, can you incriminate a person for something that they think about? It's a very interesting question, right? How do we view thoughts versus actions? Mincy, you know what I'm talking about? The thought that counts in the positive sense. The question is whether or not we can incriminate someone for the thought in the negative sense.
You think of murdering someone and there's a big difference between thinking and doing it.
Right. What was that guy's name? He was like, I forgot the other. I'm trying to find it now. There was like a documentary about him.
What did they convict him of, though?
His name was...
He was convicted of accessory or...
Well, he never did anything. That's the thing. Hilberto Valle.
But if he was...
Yes, they do not have
convicted. If you're with people who do something, then in some way you're... I mean, that's what they say on Law and Order.
Yeah.
Well, if you're the brains, like if you supply they supply the brawn, they act based on your plan.
Exactly.
But you're an accessory, I would think.
Or if you just go along, I mean, the person who sits in the car is also liable for whatever happens.
Right.
Even he's just doing the getaway.
Yeah, so it was a question of conspiracy.
Right.
The question was of conspiracy, whether or not he was found guilty, but then they sent it to different appeal courts, and the appellate judge ruled that there wasn't enough evidence to incriminate the guy. Because even though they had all these chat rooms, they had these weird plans that he made, there was no activity that would justify that he was going to ever go through with it. Which is very interesting. The whole case is very interesting. He asks such, it makes you think of such interesting questions. There was the documentary that I watched was called, I would never recommend people watch it because it's just disturbing. It was called Thought Crimes, The Case of the Cannibal Cop. That's what the documentary was called. It just asks very interesting questions. And that's the She'iltos. The She'iltos says that when Hashem says, Lo sisna sechicha bilvavecha, what it means is, it's not good enough to not act on it. That's not good enough. It also has to be that you're not thinking about it internally. You're not hating someone in your heart. The Rambam, however, says that the only time it's a problem, if it's only in your heart, you have to somehow express it outwardly. You can't violate other things when you're expressing it, obviously, but you can't harbor it in your heart. So that's an interesting discussion, just independent of our discussions. But what's interesting, I mentioned before, as I introduced before, we never finished, how would the She'iltos and the Rambam then segue into the conversation of rebuke? Right? How would they understand the limitations of rebuke vis-a-vis hatred? It would sound from the Rambam that rebuke would be one of the outward expressions that would therefore absolve you of hatred, right? If someone were to hate upon another person because of an activity that they're doing, and they then rebuke them for it, so then they don't have conviction upon them, right? They don't have the issue of hatred. They have other problems, maybe, depending on how they express themselves, as you know, in terms of embarrassment, which we saw in the Gemara, which we'll review next week. But they wouldn't be in violation of hatred once they rebuke. According to the She'iltos, any kind of hatred is wrong. Right? According to the She'iltos, it doesn't matter if you're going to rebuke someone outwardly. The point of the pasuk that says you're not supposed to hate someone in your heart is to say you're not supposed to hate somebody even in your heart. And therefore, anything outward, any outward hatred is also a prohibition of lo sisna sechicha bilvavecha. It's also a prohibition of hating your friend in your heart. Now, that would therefore mean that when a person rebukes, and this is sort of like a very tangible conclusion. The conclusion according to the She'iltos would be that when it comes to rebuke, you have to rebuke only when you don't hate the person. If you were to hate the person and rebuke them out of hatred, so that would be an added prohibition of hatred. According to the Rambam, the way that you absolve yourself from that hatred is by expressing it outwardly. Kind of an interesting nuance, an interesting ramification of this discussion between the Rambam and the She'iltos. According to Rashi, however, we said already that this is only in the realm of rebuke, that a person is allowed to hate only in one's heart. A person is only prohibited from, well, there's different ways of understanding the implications of Rashi, but let's say by rebuke a person is allowed to hate. That's Rashi's conclusion. That only by rebuke is a person allowed to hit, and of course only if that is a functional aspect of the rebuke itself. Here we go. We've got the Cookie Monster here today. Cookie Monster on Cookie Monster. You want applesauce, Cookie Monster? Okay. When it came to Rashi, however, the Kehilas Yaakov explains, similar to Rashi, that once you rebuke outwardly, you're allowed to hate in the heart also. Meaning that the Rashi's chumrah, his stringency to say that this concept that you're allowed to hit is only in the context of rebuke. So the Kehilas Yaakov says that when it comes to actually rebuking, so then you're allowed to actually violate this principle. It's not a violation anymore because you've already done it outwardly. So it's sort of an interesting nuance, which is similar to the Rambam, but within the context of rebuke. But we're not going to focus too much on that right now. So in the end of Shir number 3, we had two approaches to understanding the introduction to the Gemara. One is that hatred and rebuke are closely connected, and one is that they're really two separate entities. And based on that, we had a continuation into how do we understand the continuation of the Gemara. The continuation of the Gemara then says, Minayin leroa b'chaveiro davar meguna shehu over b'ocheach shechayv lo'chicho. How do you know that when you see your friend doing something unseemly, davar meguna, that you're obligated to rebuke them? And the answer of the Gemara was, Hochiach tochiach hazamitacha. We have a pasuk. Now, we started that shiur with a very interesting question. And it's a question that presumably you could ask on a lot of Gemaras, which is, why do we need to have this question? Why do we need to even have this conversation? The Torah says you have to rebuke somebody. So, why do we need a source? Why is the Gemara saying, how do you know you're supposed to rebuke somebody? Well, it says it in the pasuk. Right? This is similar to, what shiur did I give on Shabbos? I gave a shiur on Shabbos where it talks about, what did we talk about on Shabbos? Oh, we talked about the shofar, right? The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah says, how do you know you have to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah? So the Gemara says, what do you mean, how do I know? It says it in the Pasuk, right? Tiku b'chatzos roz, or you know, tiku b'shofar, b'kesli yom chayur. It says in the Pasuk. Different Pesukim say, you're supposed to blow the shofar. So that's the Gemara's response. What do you mean, how do I know you're supposed to blow the shofar? Of course you're supposed to, it says in the Pasuk, right? That's the Gemara's response, is what are you talking about? So here too, the Gemara should say, what do you mean? Where's the pasuk? How do I know? It's a pasuk. The pasuk says to rebuke your friend, right? If you see somebody, so the Gemara doesn't say that though. The Gemara doesn't respond in kind by saying, of course it's a pasuk. So therefore, all the Mefarshim are therefore led to analyze what could possibly be the other instant. Oh, look what the Cookie Monster brought. Cookies. True to his costume. So what could be the question that the Gemara is asking? If the question is not about the real source of rebuke, because obviously that's a pasuk, but rather it must be asking something else. So we had mentioned three things, which I think after some prodding, when I listened to the class again, we got to each one of the different possibilities based on the language of the question itself, right? If you look back at the language of the question is very specific. There were three details in the question that you wouldn't necessarily know, right? This comes back to our novelty analysis. What's the novelty in this question? What is the source for rebuking your friend if you see them doing something unpleasant? So we just asked, well, what is the Gemara asking? We know that it's a pasuk. Rather, it must be teaching us something which is beyond the pale of our assumptions, beyond what we would have thought beforehand. Number one, we said, it could be about the word chavero. It could be about your friend. When it comes to a teacher, of course, the teacher is responsible for rebuking the student. When it comes to a parent, of course, the parent is responsible for disciplining their child. But what about a friend? What about a colleague? Someone who you're on the same page with. You're on par with them. The Gemara, and we quoted in that class, the Gemara in Bava Metzia even goes so far as to say that a student is obligated to rebuke their teacher. So to hear, maybe the disagreement, that maybe the source that they're looking for in the Gemara is specifically to teach about the colleague. How do you know that the rebuke is an obligation to the colleague? So we had mentioned, I think even in that class, and maybe Aviva, I vaguely remember Aviva saying this also, that the word hocheach, tochiach, maybe it was in a different class, comes from the word vikuach. Comes from an argument. Who do you have arguments with? You don't have arguments with a teacher or a student. You don't have arguments with a child. You have arguments with peers, right? People are discussing things, have questions with each other. So that's where the Gemara comes in and says, oh, we learn it from the words hocheach, tochiach, which means that you can have this rebuke even to a peer, even to a friend. And that's why the Gemara specifically asks this question, because you would maybe not have known that otherwise. Maybe you would think it's only for someone who has authority over somebody else that you have the obligation to rebuke. But if it's a peer, maybe you wouldn't be obligated to do such a thing. What the logic in that is, I'm not sure. But maybe that's one of the things you would have assumed. Kamash Malan comes the Gemara to say, no, the Pasuk says, Hocheach Tochiach. That was possibility number one of the novelty of this question in the Gemara. Possibility number two. What is the novelty of this question? The word see. L'roeh b'chaveiro. Right? What is l'roeh b'chaveiro? That you actually have to see the person doing it. What would I have thought otherwise? What could I have thought in terms of the obligation to rebuke? Maybe I would think the obligation to rebuke applies to what situation? Even a situation where you only heard about it. Somebody told you this guy was doing something wrong, right? Somebody started a rumor about somebody, so you have to go over to them. You have an obligation to clear up the air, see if it's true or not. Or maybe you thought you saw something, or maybe you assumed that the person was going to do something, but maybe the novelty in this question is, no, you have to actually see the person doing it. If you don't see the person doing it, so you don't have an obligation to rebuke. And if you remember in that class, we compared it to what halacha? What other halacha do we compare it to? That you have to see it in order to be obligated in it. No. Right, exactly, Aviva. Exactly, when we talked all the way back by Hashavas Aveda, returning a lost item, right? Some of the bigger conclusions we came to were that you're only obligated once you see the item. If somebody tells you about it, or somebody tells you they lost something, somebody tells you that they saw a lost item somewhere, that's not an obligation yet. Presumably. You can make an argument otherwise, but one of our big conclusions was that you're only obligated to return a lost item once you see the lost item. And that was why, if you remember, we were able to be docha elotase and potentially be docha elotase with the ase. Right? If you remember the whole question about the Kohen going into the cemetery, how could he do that? Because the prohibition happens before the mitzvah starts. So then we said, no, maybe the mitzvah starts the second you see it. And that's why it could even be a question whether or not you can go into the cemetery. Here, Asher, take the rest of your cookies. You have one more cookie, okay? Bye. His mouth is full of like four cookies. Asher, chew, 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 and swallow. Either way, so that was possibility number two. That the mitzvah or the novelty of the Gemara is specifically when it comes to the rebuke, specifically when it comes to when you see somebody. When you see someone doing something, that's when you can do it. Otherwise, you can't. Now, how do you get that from the word tocheach, tocheach? I'm not 100% sure. But then lastly, we said maybe the novelty of the pasuk is that it's not about your friend or your colleague. It's not about who you see, but maybe it's about what you see, right? The Gemara doesn't say, haroa bechavero davar aser, or davar mezid, or davar shogeg. It doesn't say that he's actually violating any Torah prohibition. What does it say? Davar meguneh. A davar meguneh is just something which is off-putting. It sometimes translates to disgusting. Maybe you can translate it as inappropriate, unseemly, unpleasant. And we had brought up a question then, which is who decides what's unpleasant, right? If the whole obligation only applied when there was a prohibition on the books, so then open up a Shulchan Aruch, figure out what's wrong, figure out if this person is doing something wrong, and that's when you have to rebuke them for it. However, if the barometer for something which is wrong is davar meguneh, is something which is unseemly, well then, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, as is ugliness. So who's going to determine what's so bad? Right, and this is even the way that the Rambam says it. If you remember, we had a source of the Rambam, Davar Shelo Tov. Right, he says you see someone doing an iser, a prohibition, or something which is not good. Who's going to determine what's not good and what is good? When am I obligated? When am I not obligated? The Torah is not defining that. Here's an interesting question: what if it's an iser derabanan? What if it's a rabbinic prohibition? Presumably, that would also be davar meguneh, but not to the same extent that it would be an iser. So there are a lot of interesting flexible interpretations when you understand this Gemara like that. But maybe that's what it means, that if you see your friend doing something unpleasant, davar meguneh, that's the chiddush. The chiddush is that you would think maybe it's only if it's for a prohibition. Kamash malan, comes the Gemara to say, no, hocheach tocheach. Mikol mako means that you always rebuke. It doesn't say, the pasuk doesn't say what the amitacha is doing wrong. Hochech tochech es amitacha means you rebuke the person who did something wrong, or you rebuke the person for something that requires rebuking, even if it's not necessarily the worst thing as a prohibition in the Torah. So those were three ways that we understood that Gemara. We made a very important observation after that, though. The very important observation that we made after that was that this does not necessarily dictate what is the halacha. Meaning, the question is a good question. The answers are good answers. But the answers are not mutually exclusive. I think Mincy said this in the class, that you could hold of multiple interpretations. You can't claim that each one of these is the impression of the Gemara. Because of how you make drushes and things like that, you couldn't necessarily say that. But it's not necessarily the case that if you passing like one of these three opinions, that you can't passing like the other ones. And we even went as far as to say that the Rambam seems to passing like two of them. And this was sort of the beginning of the next class, but it was actually the end of the class. If you remember, there was this one class where my battery ran out, even though it was plugged in. So this was that class. And the end of that class, I tried to get this point out, and I picked it up in the next class to make sure that people understood it. But this was what I was trying to say then. If the Rambam paskins like one of these, for instance, he paskins that you even do it by a peer, by a friend, not just a teacher, but even a student to a teacher, and even a peer, etc. So he paskins like that, and he also says in a different halacha that you do so for non-isurim. Do so for things that are low tov, right? Things that are not necessarily usur, but are things that are just unseemly. You're allowed to rebuke a person, you're obligated to rebuke a person, even for an unseemly thing. He never makes, it doesn't sound at least, that he ever makes the distinction that you have to actually see someone do the usur to rebuke them, but I haven't looked through all the Rambams that meticulously to hone in on how he views, how he introduces things. But either way, we had noted that you could hold of multiple prohibitions, even though this is only the way that you, this is only three, even though they're presumably only one way of these three that you can understand the question, and therefore understand the Gemara. The next part of the Gemara, which we'll pick up with next week, is embarrassing someone. And you remember that there was a big problem, speaking of the Rambam, with the embarrassments. Right, the Rambam himself had said that sometimes it's okay to embarrass and sometimes it's not okay to embarrass. But from our Gemara, it sounded like you're never allowed to embarrass. And we connected some of these ideas to the class. I'm not sure if when we do the review, we'll connect it in the same way, because it's a lot of intellectual gymnastics that we don't really need for a review per se. But the Gemara had said pretty clearly, you're not allowed, pretty clear implication, that one is not allowed to rebuke someone to the extent that it would embarrass them, right? To the extent that they would be embarrassed from your rebuke, you're not allowed to do such a thing. And we had looked at different Rishonim. First, the Rambam was the bigger issue, because the Rambam says clearly you're allowed to. And the question was, where do you get that from? So we'll talk about that. That shiur next week, and we'll also talk about the shiur in terms of everybody else's opinion besides the Rambam about where they view rebuke or where they view embarrassment in terms of one's allowance within rebuke. Rashi had an interesting one where Rashi also sounds like he's saying a similar thing to the Rambam, but doesn't give us too much information, so we'll have to hone in on what exactly he means. And then we also have the Rambam, the Sefer HaMitzvos. We have different Rambams. We looked at the Ramban also, who talks about this. Not going to go into it now, but Mirtz Hashem, next week we'll talk about first we'll review the shiurim about one's the embarrassment, meaning one's prohibition to embarrass a person when they're rebuking, when it applies, if it applies, and then we'll talk about, after that, the three exceptions, right? The three exceptions are our favorite exceptions. One is the exception to rebuke because of the rebuker, the exception to the rebuke because of the rebukee, and the exception to rebuke because of the results of the rebuke. Any clarifications on this review? anyone have some points that they wanted to add or some points that they wanted more review clarification on? I think this is a pretty neat and organized way to sort of review it so that we can really look back on the different opinions. So here we have, I don't know, the bottom in the last year, we didn't really have people who said it, different Mepharshim said it, but it's good to note the different ways of understanding the Gemara so we can look back at it. And then the different opinions that we have on the top, in the middle section, the Rashi and the Shiltos and the Rambam, about how to reference back to the general prohibition of hatred and in regards to rebuke, and then and also the Kliyakar and the Menchah Sinach about who is Amitacha. So we'll have these sheets as a good reference points to look back on if we revisit some of these modern day psak, some of these modern day responsa, to see where things that we learned in the background of the Gemara fit into the halacha. Yeah, Aviva.
I've missed a few, so you may have discussed this.
Yeah.
But something that is a hard, and you don't have to go through it again if you did.
Yeah.
So if it's in the heart, then who's going to say, you know, it is or it isn't? That's a very, nobody
right
can know besides Hashem.
Right. Yeah, we talked about that. We said that that's why the pasuk says so. That's why the pasuk says Ani Hashem Elokecha at the end of the pasuk. Because the truth is, you're right. The only one that's going to know if you're in violation of that, according to the Shiltos opinion, and according to the Rambam's opinion, the only one who would know is Hashem himself. So yeah, you're right. It's not one of those things that we can adjudicate ourselves. But it is good to know so that we don't violate the principle. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Some good review. Hopefully we'll get a few classes in next week. Also, this one we covered four classes, believe it or not. Well, the first one wasn't really a class. It was an introduction. But we introduced the fifth class already. So I guess that's a little bit of the first one, a little bit of the fifth one. That makes it four classes that we went through tonight. And then I'm not sure how much we'll get through next week, but maybe four or five classes also. And therefore, we have a better background when we go into applying it to the modern day halacha. Okay.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
All the best. Have a good night.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's good to be back.